So, for our time today, we want to see three lessons. Preach to the dead, judge in the flesh, alive in the spirit. The first lesson we see, preach to the dead. That phrase is, I gotta admit, as I was studying this passage this week, I was starting to shake my head because Peter starts out relatively simple and easy. And then once he hits the end of chapter 3, he starts getting really complicated and very confusing. Verse 6 is a little bit like that because he literally uses the phrase preach to the dead. With that being said, we have to tackle that confusion head on, okay? Because we have to remember that when God gave us His Word, He didn't give it to us in riddles or to confuse us, but He gave us His Word to enlighten us. Not to necessarily teach us information, He does that, but He gave us His Word to reveal Himself to us. And so, what does that mean, preach to the dead? It seems very odd, and it can be mistakenly taken or understood as something the Roman Catholic Church teaches, which is that salvation is possible or even available to those people who are already dead. Okay, Bible is not saying that. Peter does not say that. He is not saying that here either. Because if you want to say that, you got to do some, as my professors used to say, you got to do some gymnastics with the Greek grammar. Okay. In fact, I learned that if you do enough Greek grammar gymnastics in the Bible, then you can make Jesus say Barack Obama is the Antichrist. It's very interesting. Yeah. Anyway, Jesus doesn't say that, by the way, in case you internet people don't. Yeah, I don't want you to think, oh yeah, Jesus said that Barack Obama. No, he didn't say that. Okay. But there are people on the internet who will say, let me prove it to you that Jesus said this. Okay. So, anyway, this being another example, if we twist the rules of grammar a little bit here and there, then we can make Peter say that preaching is necessary and good for those people who are even dead. That's not the point that Peter's making here. So what is it that he's talking about? Peter is talking about specifically about those people who heard the gospel, trusted in Jesus, and have now died. Okay, you got to understand that from a biblical perspective, death is not natural. Death is not a part of life. Death is not designed by God. Okay, that's why, for example, in Genesis, when Cain killed his brother, Adam and Eve are like, "Oh man, what are we supposed to do?" Right? Because death was they're not used to it. They've never seen anyone die before. In fact, they weren't even sure if they were supposed to die. All they know is that now that sin has entered the world, God said, "Because of sin, you will die." Okay, and there is some thought that the first century Christians, you got to remember, the guys who saw Jesus in their lifetime, right? And those guys who saw Jesus go to heaven, they didn't know when Jesus was going to come back. So there was this real expectation that Jesus was going to come back in their lifetime. Okay, especially John, because remember, Jesus says to John, like, he doesn't say John is never going to get executed. Although he just says to Peter, you know, what's it, you know, what do you care if I allow him to live until I come back? right? And so there started this rumor at the end of John. John shows, shares this with us. He says that at the end of the gospel, end of his gospel, he says that there was a rumor among the disciples that he's going to live, John was going to survive until Jesus returned. How is that possible? Because they thought that Jesus might actually legitimately return in their lifetime. And so the first century church kind of ran into this, not a real big panic, but a little bit of a what do we do kind of thing. Kind of like Adam and Eve, when the first century, first believers, that first generation started dying. Okay, the disciples started getting executed. You know, we see Stephen, for example, in the book of Acts getting martyred. And so there was this real, there's a lot of theories about what they believe. Some people think that the first Christians thought that when they believe in Jesus, when Jesus says stuff like, you know, if you believe in me, even though you die, you live, all that kind of stuff, they literally thought that they were not going to die. Okay? And so when these people actually started dying, there's a lot of confusion. Okay? Even Paul talks about this, addresses this issue in the book of Thessalonians, the letter to the Thessalonian church. Because some people started saying that if you were a Christian and then you died, then your soul was, there was, you were never really sure. Right? And so here Peter is kind of addressing it a little bit in a sideways fashion. But he is saying, he is referring to those people who heard the gospel and then have died afterwards. Okay? For us in 2014, it's a little bit weird, because in 2014 we understand that Christians and non-Christians die. Okay, it's just a simple fact of life. But for the first original audience of Peter reading this letter, this was a newsflash. It was a very big shock, even in some of those communities. Okay. And so they said, because they were under, you know, the thought, hey, Christ freed us from sin and death. Okay, and they thought that when Jesus said death, he wasn't talking about spiritual death, but he was literally also talking about physical death. So they were literally thinking that idea of, oh man, you know, I'm not going to die. Now, what does that mean for us today, as well as 2,000 years ago? It means this. It means that the gospel, the power of the gospel, is not limited just to life. But the power of the gospel reaches beyond the grave. And it's for this life and the next. Because if the gospel was only limited to this life, that would be pretty weak, honestly. Right? Because it's, if the gospel was just about this life, then Joel Osteen's book is completely true. It's about your best life now. And who knows what happens afterwards. That would be his subtitle. No, but the gospel, the power of the gospel is for now, where God saves us real in real time now. Right? God changes us in the real time, in the everyday moments now. And that power of the gospel will take us beyond the grave, where after we die, we will have been perfected and completed to be made like Christ. Okay, so the power of the gospel here carries us in this life and carries us on to the next. The second lesson we see, judged in the flesh. Okay, so who is judging? There's a lot of judging going on. Because judge is another word in the Bible that comes up a lot. It's very confusing. Because in one moment you'll see God judging, and then the next moment you'll see Jesus say, don't judge people. Okay? And then you see other people accusing other people of judging. It's like, what's going on? What's all this judging? Okay? Judging the flesh. Okay, now, so who is judging who in this passage? It's the unbelieving world, the non-believers who are judging the believers. Okay, so in context, Peter is talking about the believers who have been put to death. We know that out of the 12 disciples, the original disciples of Christ, John is the only one who really lived to old age. It is tradition that says that he lived up until the late 80s and the 90s. Okay? He might have, there's even some rumors that he actually made it off Patmos, okay, where he wrote the Revelations. And the reason being that there was a lot of speculation on why or how, but the real reason why we have these rumors is because we have these letters from people saying, oh yeah, I saw John last week, you know, he was here, he was not from Patmos, he was, you know, the Romans took him out or whatever. But we haven't found any official documents. Nonetheless, so who is judging who? Here, it's talking about the non-believers who are judging the believers who are dying, who are being executed, at the very least being persecuted for their faith. And Peter is talking about the fact that as the unbelieving world persecuted and executed these Christians, they thought they were doing good. Okay, so that's what Peter says when that's what he's talking about when he says, though they are judged in the flesh as men, meaning in the humanly sense, they said these Romans said, hey, putting these guys to death, whatever. It's a good thing. Besides, they're rabble-rousers, they're troublemakers. You know, it's a good thing that we do this. Jesus, on the night he was betrayed in John 16, 1 and 2, says this, they will make you outcasts or kick you out of the synagogues. And in an hour is coming when everyone who kills you will think that he is offering a service to God. These things they will do because they have not known me or the Father. Okay? So Jesus warns the disciples, hey, there's going to come a time when people are going to kill you and persecute you, and they will think that they're doing a good thing. In fact, they will actually do that and think they're doing even religiously, the correct thing. And it's easy, I think, for us in 2014 sitting here, and specifically just kind of pick on the Islamic militants, you know, and say, yeah, that's very true, very true. Those people, they will hate on Christians and persecute and execute Christians, and they think that they are doing that in the name of Allah, therefore it's okay. And it's a good thing. But before we pick on them too much, we turn the clock back just a little bit, even in our country, and we see groups like the KKK, who were persecuting African-Americans and other minorities in this country, and they were doing it in the name of God. In fact, they were doing it in the name of Christ. And they thought that what they were doing was a good thing. And so we can't, you know, be too quick to just pick on the latest anti-Christian fad, okay? Because we have to remember, you have to have a sobering view of history. And so, judged in the flesh. And I don't think it's too hard for me to say, yeah, you know what? Even now, we get persecuted. We might not get necessarily executed in Nova, but we will be persecuted for our faith, and people will think that they're doing a good thing. In my personal life, in my other job, they don't understand why I'm not so obsessed and, you know, about making certain, meeting some standards or meeting some mark or whatever, you know. And they don't understand. They're like, well, you don't get paid as much in this job as you do in this one. why should you care so much about this? You know, why don't you just give that up and just do this? You'll make more money that way. In fact, there have been even people telling me, hey, you need to not go to this church anymore because they're small and they can't afford to pay you the money that you should be getting paid for you to do full-time ministry, which is what I want to do. And so, in fact, what you should do is you should apply to some of these bigger churches. Then you'll get the money that you need, so you don't have to worry about this thing or that thing. You can just focus on serving God. And when they tell me these things, they think they're doing the correct thing. And for all of us here, we have different ways that we get persecuted at our work, at our homes, at our school. It comes out in different ways. And so, us in 2014, just like those guys 2,000 years ago, we're judged in the flesh. But the last lesson is also true, is actually even more true, which is that we are alive in the Spirit according to the will of God. So, in the midst of this kind of bleak picture, what is our hope? Because it seems like, even though New Testament guys write this, it seems like a lot of times that we are like sheep, just in line, right, waiting to get slaughtered. That's actually the line from the Bible, you know. If we look at Psalm 73, it's a psalm written by a praise leader, guy who's doing ministry with Solomon and David. If you think, oh, David is like a Bible hero, no, man, that guy has some issues. Okay, and if you read him, he's like, man, I'm busting my head, like, trying to do this thing correctly. I'm writing praise songs and trying to do the worship in the temple, and I'm trying to do all the right things, but I look at my life and how stressed I am, and then I look at all these messed up people who hate God, who don't care about anybody else, and they're good. They're fat. They're making money. They live in a fat house, right? And they got the nice horses, right? I got nothing. I got to walk everywhere. Right? And so, what then is our hope? Our hope is, we talked about it in the first point, is that the power of the gospel, power of the good news, that it carries us in this life, and it carries us to the next. Just like, taking the quote from my professor at my friend's first wife's funeral. In this life, we're ahead. In life, we're ahead. In death, we remain undefeated. That's the power of the gospel. Right? And so, what Peter is saying is, in this life, we will suffer, actually. Peter has a very sobering picture that he gives to the church about, in this life, trying to live as a faithful Christian in this life, you will face a lot of difficulties. And you will face persecution, unfair persecution. But Peter's continual encouragement and reminder is that though in this life we may suffer, we will suffer loss, and sometimes even suffer death. We are nonetheless made alive in the Spirit. Right? And so Peter has this contrast. In this life you suffer. In this life you have hardship. But God makes you alive in the Spirit. God has caused us to be alive, made alive in the Spirit. And so this is what it means to have a gospel hope, a living and resurrection hope. Okay? It means, it's saying this, that since the resurrection is true, that the difficult things that we face in this life, we can get through it. Doesn't mean it's not going to hurt. Doesn't mean it's not going to be it's enjoyable all the time. It's not going to be sunshine all the time. what it means, right? Resurrection hope, gospel hope, means that even though right now it's thunderstorm, there's going to become a day where it's going to be sun shining all day, every day. That's the resurrection hope. For me, this is very important. The last 2 weeks of my life have been pretty terrible, honestly. A lot of stress. It seems like all hell is breaking loose a lot of times. Honestly, guys, it sucks. Because it's like something happens. It's work. Okay? Something happens at work and it's bad. It's headache inducing. It's so bad sometimes that at night I have a headache and, you know, and Peggy has to deal with that. And it seems like, okay, and we put out that fire, and it's like, as soon as we do that, another fire starts up, and it's like, dude, are you serious? And so I understand what Peter's writing about, because he's like, man, you know what, in this life, it's like, it's gonna suck. This is painful, it's terrible, it's stressful. But we have to remember, we live in the Spirit, according to the will of God. We are made alive in the Spirit. And then we live with resurrection hope. That there will be one day, no more tears. No more sorrows. I don't know about you, but that sounds pretty good to me. There will be one day when we can finally rest in Christ. We don't have to worry about the next thing, the next thing, or the next thing. We just rest in Jesus. And that's a beautiful thing. We see a little taste of it here. This is why I think Sundays are so precious to me, because Sunday is when I can rest in Christ. And this is why we like having you guys over, because when you guys come over, that's my rest. You know, that's how I can enjoy Jesus. You know, because it's the people of God coming together, enjoying each other's presence. You know, that's Sabbath rest. And giving me a small taste of what is to come. And so let's, as the people of God, live with that real expectation of gospel hope, gospel resurrection. Let's pray.